Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So sit there. Come. An ascended master. What is the try here?
It's rather you can sit there, then it's easier for people in the back to see you. Otherwise, those in the back, they cannot actually see you.
The higher you sit, you know, the farther it is you fall down.
One time, I do a lot of traveling in South America. It's very nice there. It's kind of like India, only cheaper to get there. In some ways, it's nicer, always worse.
So, I had a new Vyasa-san, you know, they have a preaching center in Lima. It's a three-story building and a restaurant down below, and you know, people come and eat, like about 120 people for the regular programs. So they had a new asana just built like that, you know. And so I sat on the asana, and as soon as I sat down, the back legs broke. So the audience saw me just, you know. And of course, they were mortified. They'd done this to their guests and so on. So they 30 people trying to pick me up, and they got bricks into the back, and then they sat down again. You know. Traveling's always very difficult. You know, this is the Vedas are so vast. There's like one professor, George Hart. Is there echo on that thing? You can. Is there an echo control on that? Does it have to echo? Yeah, can you turn the echo off. Yeah. Hello? Anyway. Ah, it's better, yeah. Hello, so, still an echo. No echo. Yeah, better. Okay, yeah, it's good. Yeah. So, there's a professor, George Hart. Maybe Gary Hart, one of the two, like that. Yeah. Okay, come closer. We're vegetarian. Don't worry. Only eat the guests we like. Sign of affection.
Not the host.
Yeah, no, the host. Yeah. Don't eat the host until after the prasadam. Yeah. So he's Professor George Hart. He's from the University of California, Berkeley. Department of Southeast Asian Studies. And he wrote a book called A Rapid Sanskrit Method. And it's not a very good book, really, in terms of other books that are available. This is quite some time ago. But in the preface, he's writing, why would anybody want to learn Sanskrit? You know? So he says, well, there's so many different literatures available. And he quotes one book called the Catalogus Catalogorum, something like that. And it's a bibliography, maintained by Sanskritists, Indologists, on all known existing ancient Sanskrit works. Like it has like some book on medicine and the Maharaj of Mysore's library and some description, some book on, a perfect number, magic number squares, and architectural design in the University of London. And so it has so many topics. When it was last published, it included over 140,000 ancient Sanskrit texts available. So one of my disciples graduated from Oxford at 22 years old, his PhD, Radhika. And he makes this point. You can look at Arabic classic literature. You can look at Greek and Latin classical literature or Jewish classical literature. But when you come to Indian classical literature, it's just like... little box over here compared to this big library. So vast, unlimited. If you look in the Encyclopedia Britannica for different countries, it'll have Germany, the geography, the history, the literature of Germany. And they have the literature of England, America. But only one country does it have the philosophy of. Which country?
India.
yeah. Because that's, if you want good food, okay, you go to Italy, and you have pizza. If you want romance, you go to France. If you want good administration, England, British. If you want good machines, right. But if you want philosophy,
India.
Yeah. Not if you want good machines or things like that. And every country has their particular role to play in the world. You know? So India has this particular dharma. It's a land of philosophy, of introspection, mysticism, like that. You know? And the British had a whole propaganda program to cover this, to confuse people like that, which is still going on. Actually, it is. It's in the media. So, but still, there's so much literature. So then George Hart goes ahead and says the topics. You know, if it says, for example, like the Iliad, I mean, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, these rank amongst the greatest classics in the world, like the Iliad, the Odyssey. Without a doubt, there's no greater pre-modern grammarian than Panini. Who else we got? And he says you'll find mathematical systems that require an entire lifetime for a Westerner to master just one of them like that. You know, I was chief guest at a seminar sponsored by University of Calcutta on science and technology in ancient India. P.C. Chundar, you know, former Union Minister of Education, was there, everybody else like that. And it was the first time it was done. It was done because of us, too, Hepatitis of ISKCON. And these scientists were coming and talking about, yes, I've been interested in the Vedas, and there's so many descriptions in the Vedas of machines, of technology. It wasn't that India didn't have these things, but they thought they were kind of like toys or useful in certain circumstances. But you shouldn't make your whole life into technology and machines and things like that, you know. So the Vedas have all this information. He goes through this and he says, except for a few South Indian works, in my opinion, the greatest work of devotional literature ever written is Srimad Bhagavatam, like that, you know, Mahapuran. You know. So all this is there, you know. And the thing is then to try and take advantage of all this knowledge, you know. And so a lot of the Vedas, what they discuss, is the Varna Ashram system. You know, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha.
Sannyas.
Yeah. And they give social, psychological suggestions about how to, you know, certain things, certain rights and responsibilities, and certain, you know, obligations and things like that, how your mentality will work. You know, men are from Mars, and women are from Venus. There's a book. So there's got to be, no, there's a difference between men and women. There's a difference between old people and young people. There's a difference between merchants and soldiers. We're mentioning so much now, Partha Sarthidas, he's one devotee in ISKCON. He's a sergeant in the U.S. Army, almost top sergeant. Been there for 11 years. He can't get out. He's tried to get out. But he's telling us, he went to a seminar in New Vrindavan, and he says, don't be offended, but he says, since I've been 17 years old, my whole life has been focused on how to kill people. You know, and I stopped counting how many people I've killed, and I stopped counting how many times people have tried to kill me. And that's such a different, you know, when you go to work every day, when you put your hat on and walk out the door, your wife doesn't, you know, his wife thinks this is the last time I may see him. You know, that's just part of the job of being a soldier's wife. It's a different job, you know. You're sitting at home, your police officer's wife, you're sitting at home, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, a police car pulls up in front of your house, the captain gets out, and one female police officer, what do they come for? Tell you your husband's dead. Yeah. You know, so it's a different dharma being a Kshatrini, right, than being a Vaishini, or a, you know. But the Vedas give suggestions about how to do these things. This is a reflection of the spiritual world, right? This world is a reflection of the spiritual world. It's not false, it's just limited. And you can have a reflection of an apple in the mirror. It looks like an apple, but you can't get much nutritional value out of it, right? You can't eat it or taste it or smell it, but it's not false, it's just a reflection. So this world, if we learn to live in the reflection properly, then we can get ready to live in the real world again like that, yeah? And so the Varnashram system is a very, very nice system, and it's meant to be connected with spiritual life. If it's not, it's like cutting off your arm. It's, you know, it's no value unless you can reconnect the thing. It's actually very disgusting unless it can be reconnected. Actually, I knew one person, when a relative, it happened. He got somehow or other, who was a child, they had a lawnmower or something, got his arm cut off, and they, you know, toss it into somebody's leather jacket and, you know, with some ice and toss, you know, got some tourniquet there and ran him off to the hospital. And then about, I think it was like 6 hours later, and $114,000, he had his arm reconnected like that. And yeah, it grew and everything else. It's a little bit weaker and stuff like that. But you know, this is a miracle of modern Asuric technology, like that. You know? Yeah. Yeah. They caused the accidents and they solved the problems. You know, yeah, this kind of technology. You know? So, Vastu, architecture, Gandharva Veda, music, fine arts, Jyotish, astrology. What else we got? In the Varnashram system, these are all designed as Vedangas. What does Anga mean? Yeah, limbs. Yeah, they're supposed to bring you to the thing of who am I, what is life, these kind of things. So you can, by Vastu, let's see, which way is west? Which way is east? Where does the sun rise?
East.
They're pointing that way, you're pointing this way. You have one basic problem here. So it comes up over that way. Okay, so the east and that side, that's not bad. But then you got your major, your road is going... It was going north and south. Yeah. Okay, it's okay. Yeah, you've got a pretty good Vastu here. You've got your major entrances in the west. That's not good. That's not good. But facing the sunrise, if you make that your temple room, mm-hmm. and make that the and kind of just keep these curtains always closed on this side, then there's always sunrise. And that's, you know, I put a pond out there with water like that. And there's like this feeling of morning, you're always there in the morning when the sun's coming up. And when the sun's setting, okay, we don't focus on that so much. It's there. You know? There should be heavy storage areas on this side. This side is earth. That side is space and light. This is air. This is good for garage, guest bedroom, you know, like that. Yeah, yeah. So everything has a certain, you know, reality. And you start investigating these things, and it works. I mean, there's so many stories about Vastu adjustments and problems and everything else like that. You know? And so, but there's two kinds of Vastu. One is written by Maya Danava, and the other was written by Vishvakarma. So who's Vishvakarma? In Bengal, you know.
Architect.
He's the architect for the demigods. And Maya Danava? Architect for the demons. So his architecture is how to build gambling casinos, how to, you know, no windows, no light, you know, like that. And, you know. Yeah, it is. It's for material enjoyment. You can build, and Vishvakarma is how to build your house for austerity, you know, introspection, you know, purification, like that, comprehension. You know? So all these things are designed for that purpose, and we have all these things, you can take advantage of them. We can live in this world and make a very fantastic world. It can become, you know, by the mercy of the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, who's coming now, and it's Krishna himself. You know, the whole world can be just like Ram Raja. You know, it's like the kingdom of Ram. You know? It cannot even be death for those who do not want it. Right? Everything can become very nice for spiritual realization like that. You know? So this Varnashram system has this sannyas order. So I joined ISKCON in 1974, and I was kind of a vanaprast at that point. You know, just jump right in at 24 years old and try and be a part of Vedic culture. Difficult. So after, I was being a brahmachari, I was in the temple in San Francisco, I was a treasurer, you know, and different, all kinds of jobs, occupations. And after 10 years, everything kind of got settled down in my social life and everything else, and people were pushing me, you should take sannyas, you should take lifelong vows and everything else. And I was like, well, I don't know. I find everybody saying, all right, all my authorities. And so I took sannyas in 1984. Then sannyas has four stages and subdivisions. What are they?
Bahudha.
First one. What's the first one?
Kudichak.
Yeah.
Kutichak.
Yeah,
Bahudha.
And then?
Bahudha.
Yeah, or Madhukari, same thing.
Paramhans. No, that's the fourth one. Parivrajakacharya.
Yeah, Parivrajakacharya. So you're living in the family life, and the conditioning is very profound. You don't realize how deep it is. When my father left his body, I hadn't seen him for a long time, but still I was having dreams and stuff. Wow, I didn't know the connection was so deep like that. So living together, especially if you're in Grihastha Ashram, if husband and wife are married, in the following Vedic system, which I suspect here nobody was really married following real Vedic system. You know, how many ladies here were married at 11 years old? No. Yeah. And it means betrothed. It doesn't mean you're married. It means that, you know, you put your husband's, future husband's picture. You're 11 years old. He's, you know, 17 years old. You put his picture on your altar along with your teddy bears. But yeah, it's a very, you know, it's a very natural, intense, you know, consciousness is fixed, and so I'm living through, have a relationship with this person, you know. Prabhupada describes that he was married like that. And at some point there's a ceremony where the two families come together and the girl cooks for the first time for her new future husband. Now she's like 12 years old or something, and we're cooking something and her face is covered and the ceremony. And at some point she's supposed to bring and put the food in front of him. And Prabhupada said at that point when she did that, he grabbed her hand like that. You know? So she started, her was terrified. And then his mother laughed and said, let her go like that. And so she ran back to her mother and sat down, and she was you know, terrified, but also very pleased that her husband was like, you know, so bold. You know, so very sweet. Very, your mind can't avoid these things. It's very, this is meditation to fix the mind on something. You know, so now we're fixing on Bart Simpson, or you know, or something, or you know, stock options, or my career, or should I rotate my tires, or you know, we're meditating on these things. And you're going to die, and you're going to come back as an automobile mechanic or something. You know, so you live that way. Yeah, like that. Yeah. So Varna Ashram is meant for activity, for pious activity, for meditation, and to ultimately come to this point of going internally. You know, who am I? You know, sannyas is going that way. You know? So then you take sannyas and you get out of the house. And you live in some cottage, someplace, you know, a little distance. And your family brings you food and visits you, but at night you're alone there, and you start realizing there are wolves, there are monsters, and you say, well, but God is everywhere, and you have experiences, he comes, he helps you, you have your deities, and you actually begin to feel more personal relationship with your deities and chanting, and you begin to feel, yeah, there is a God. And the next stage, you stop taking food from your family, you just go throughout your village, you know, Bahudak, Madhukari, and taking a little bit from different people like that, you know. And you begin to that way broaden your horizons, that these are all my family members. Everybody's my family. Why do you think that this is my family? And you hear about everybody and what's happening, and you start to see, you know, everywhere, the spirit. You start to see the spirit everywhere. You know? The next stage? Parivrajakachari. Now you're more experienced, you understand, and you take off, and you're just traveling outside your community all over the world. And by this point you really begin to see that, yeah, everywhere I go, is certain things are just the same. You know, certain kinds of psychology, certain kinds of way people act, and like that, and you know. And then finally, after doing that for many years, then you come back in Paramahansa, and usually by then physically you can't travel anymore, you know. And usually at that point you don't preach to people in general, but just to higher Madhyama Adhikaris, people who are already, you know, you're guiding them in their work, how to go through these stages like that. You know? So wherever we catch up, we can try and follow the process. It's natural. You know? I know myself, for example, I took sannyas and I stayed in the San Francisco area. And, you know, then I was visiting different temples and houses around the Bay Area. Like I saw, actually, it was this natural Baudak. It was natural. But even that, I was still involved in the politics of, you know, the institution and all these things. One time when Brahmin was going to the temple to do puja, and he was all bathed and everything, and feeling very proud, and one dog ran in front of him. So he picked a rock up and threw it and hit the dog and cut his face, and he was bleeding. And the dog was howling, and he went and approached the Brahmin and said, that wasn't fair, you know. My shadow didn't even touch you. I'm going to make a complaint to the king. And so everybody's kind of looking, this talking dog. This was during Ramachandra's reign. The talking dog, you know. So the Brahmin's looking, and the dog says, come with me, you know. So the Brahmin's following the dog and people. And they come in this Ram Darbar, and there's Sita and Ram. And the people are coming one after another with their particular, you know, things to put in front of the king. And Sita and Ram are seeing this kind of strange group there with a dog with some dry blood on his face and a very pukka Brahmin and this, you know, people standing behind him. So finally it comes their turn. And the dog makes his whole complaint, you know. And then Ram is listening like that, and Sita to the dog, and then Ram says, well, you know, is it true? And the Brahmin says, yes, I was proud and I hurt this poor animal unfairly. And then Brahma says, well, okay. He says, well, what should be his chastisement? What should be his punishment? If the dog can talk. So the dog says, you should make him the head of a large spiritual organization. And the Ram says, that's punishment? And the dog says, yes, that's what I was in my last lifetime. GBC, key dot. Temple president, key dot. Yeah. So we're engaging in these activities. And even in our ISKCON, there's so much politics, you know. It's less in other groups, they physically assassinate each other and, you know, do all these. I mean, ISKCON, not that bad, you know. But still, there's things. There's this social tension, this group, that group, and you can't really give your opinion freely, which is what a sannyasi is supposed to be doing. So at that point, about 1990 then, after one big event, I said, okay, that's it. I'm just going to take off now and travel all over the world. And I was frightened. I didn't have any money, no connection, no social support. I had just enough money to go and not come back. But no, there seems to be a God, and this is what I'm supposed to do. It's my dharma. So we took off, and since then, everything has just worked out. You know, it's 1990, it's 16 years. I had no money, probably traveled more than anybody else in this room. You know? Now I'm kind of coming to the end of that. You know? I remember when I was going to finally leave the U.S., I came all the way to Florida, and they had, you know, so I had an invitation to go to Peru, South America. And I said, oh yeah, come, wasn't he? Okay, come on if you want to, like thing. Okay, so I had some money, and, you know, and I made like $400 or something, and then I had one credit card. And I thought, okay, let me charge the ticket on the credit card, because then I go there and have a little money like that, you know. So I went in there and tried to use a credit card, and somebody had given me a bad check, which balanced, and the credit card wasn't working. I was, oh my God. So I asked them, how much is the ticket? And they said, well, it's $425, you know. So I took all the money out of my wallet, my piggy bank, and everything else, and I had something like about, you know, $427. It was that close, right? I thought, wow, this is kind of like, you know, Krishna's telling me something here. You know, you just, I'll take care of the money. You just travel and preach. You do your work, I'll do my work. So I gave him all the money I had. I said, are there any taxes at the airport? He said, oh, there's nothing. Okay. So I was leaving the temple to go to the airport, and somebody gave me $20. You know, sannyasi, you know. I got $22. Okay, wow, you know, leaving the country. So I got to the airport, checked in, my luggage, everything else. The guy said, okay, the tax is $15. He said, there's no tax. No, there's a tax. You want to fly? I want to fly. Okay, so $20. You know, $5 into $1 bill. You know. So I landed in this foreign country at midnight with nothing but $7 in my pocket. But I was feeling jitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita. Bhagavad Gita says, you conquer the mind, bring it under control, then you'll see behind the mind is the atma, the paramatma, giving you direction. That's where the thoughts are coming from. That's where the intelligence is coming from. We're doing very little, actually. So I was actually feeling, you know, it was all being controlled. So like that, with different experiences, and you really begin to get more and more, you know, detached with the external world and more attached to the internal world. I mean, just the ashram itself forces you to realize certain things, you know, like that. So that's why we should try and understand Varna Ashram Dharma and try and follow it. Probably gives so much advice in his books. He gives so many details about it and general principles like that. For example, when you're traveling, everything's always changing. Changing, changing, changing. Here, your clothes are in a certain place, you have a certain kind of food, same person is cooking. You know, sometimes I play a little game when I wake up in the morning. Which continent are we on? Which country are we in? You know, which city? And where is the bathroom? Because you even got to figure out where the bathroom is every morning when you wake up, right? If I do that, but if I was traveling three different cities a week at the height of my travel like that, and you wake up, it's like that. Your mind is like, you know, trying to figure out where you are. One time we went from Lima, Peru, no, we went from Bolivia, which is, how it is, it's 13,000 feet up. Yes, it's three times the height of Denver. If you're in Bolivia, looking down, Denver is going to be 2 miles below you. Denver is the mile-high city. Went from there down to Lima to Ecuador, which is a steaming coastal place, on back up to Cuenca, which is again in the mountains, all in one day. And the plane, you know, had to stop because it was broken windshield. You know, all these travel problems, you know. getting there, going, coming, like that. Yeah. That's the one. No, I was worse. I think that's only one old story. Pins it off. I reconfirmed the reservation from Cochabamba to La Paz in Bolivia, and from La Paz to Lima, and then from Lima to Guayaquil. Okay. So I got there. I got to check in. No, the one from, local flight from La Paz. Oh God, it's even more. I remember now. Oh God, it was a day. It was a typical day. We woke up. We had Mongol Artik in Cochabamba. And we went outside with all my luggage ready at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to the airport for the flight at 7 o'clock, which was supposed to be a half an hour flight to connect the other flight at 8:30 in La Paz. It had to be like that. Okay. And then and devotees were meeting me in the airport with my luggage because I couldn't carry it all. It was in transit time. So I got outside, we're waiting. The vehicle's not there. The devotee's not coming. So after about 10 minutes, it's getting a little late, I see the devotee running out of the building, running down the street like that. What's happening? It's late. He can't find his keys. Okay. So he comes back. He woke up some taxi guy. The taxi guy comes like that. You know, we load all the luggage in. Got to get to the airport. Got to rush to the airport. This is a true story. Drove to the airport. Get to the gate at the front of the airport. We pay the tax to go parking. What happened?
Okay.
Flat tire. Yeah. So we get out. And we're running across the field with six people with the luggage like that. You know, getting there, I'm running. We get inside. They're chastising us for being late. They shove us on the airplane. We land in La Paz. I come out. And the devotees are, find the devotees in my luggage. The guy's trying to get me checked in. His cousin's there. He gets us in the line. We get him checked in. And they go through everything. And they say, did you reconfirm your reservation? I said, yes. He said, well, it's confirmed from La Paz to Peru. But there's your reservation from there to Guayaquil is not confirmed. There's no seats on the airplane. They're screaming, yelling, and all. They didn't know. You know, they have all the cards on their side. Okay, so I land in La Paz. I had to come out of the in-transit thing, go to the desk, and they, you know, they said, well, there's nothing available. Sit there and wait. And then the devotees are coming back from India, right? And their luggage had been destroyed by a transit machine in La Caracas, so they had no luggage. And they said, oh, we got a phone call from Guayaquil. They want to know if you're still coming or not. Yeah, I'm coming. Yeah, okay. Oh, fortunately, you know. Okay, they'll be at the airport. So then I went back up, and it was last minutes for the flight, and there's somebody hadn't shown up. So I went up there, and they're checking me onto the flight like that. I look over, and way in the distance is some man running towards the counter. Oh. I figure out, this is the guy whose seat I'm taking, you know. So I kind of figured real quick. I ran away before they got, and got back inside, got on the airplane, got to Guayaquil. And then on the way there, there was the broken windshield, so they had to wait for an hour for the thing to change the windshield. Flew to Guayaquil. Got off the airplane, the devotee said, oh, okay, relax. No, you got to go to Cuenca right away. You changed the schedule. You can't stay here. So back another airplane. And landed in Cuenca. It's cold now again. I had pleurisy because of this. Get off the airplane. Go to the devotee's house. It's a beautiful house, but no heating. Anyway, in the mountains, you know. Here's your room. Beautiful room, but it's cold. You know, like that. So, okay. Now it's 5 o'clock. So I went into the bathroom to, you know, get refreshed after all this. And there's a bathroom, and they said, there's hot water. Oh, thank you, you know. So I turned on the cold water. One says C, right? C is for cold. But in Spanish, C is? Caliente, hot. Turned the water, and this scalding blast of hot water hit my chest. I screamed, ah! Turned it off, and then my chest was red. How my shower came out, and that was, so, you know, dehydrated from all this air travel. So they fortunately put a nice bottle of water there. So, but when I opened it, it was carbonated, and somebody had shook it. So when I opened the bottle of water, it was. So, true story. So, Krishna arranges all these things. So, I took some water, then I was looking around. My mind at that point was just, you know, completely panicked. It was like looking at the bed, like, you know, the bed was, you know, trying to attack me or something like that, you know. So I just started chanting, and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, and telling my mind, don't worry, it's okay, you know. It's like, the bed won't attack you, see? Okay. See? It won't attack you. It's okay, it won't break, you know, like that. So this is Varna Ashram Dharma. Daivi Varna Ashram Dharma. It's directed by Krishna for self-realization. You can't count on this world, right? And this world, ultimately, it's like that. You've got to realize this world is not trustworthy. You know? You know, everything can change. And when one, And I don't know, and Richard Nixon told the press one time, I can go in the next room, make one phone call, and in 45 minutes, 100 million people would be dead. So that's the, you know, the power. George Bush had the same thing. Within 45 minutes, the whole world could be, you know, changed. And how much reaction is from other countries, I don't know. How much within one day, the whole world could be, if somebody flips out. You know, people they say this. We got the news, right? It's in the news. They tell you this. They tell you there's just no security whatsoever. Anybody wants to cause a major, major catastrophe, they can do it in so many ways like that. So it was not secure, you know. Well, then you're just pessimistic. Well, not pessimistic, we're realistic. Yeah. We're looking for something we can hang on to in the middle of all this. You know, the Mormons, one of their religious requirements is that every grihasta has to have 1 year worth of food stored. This is part of their religion. You know, they're pessimistic. Well, yeah. Seattle just recently, my devotee there, it was a power failure for 5 days. They had no electricity in their part of Seattle. Nice area too. That. And the roads, people were sitting there. There was a big windstorm. The roads got blocked, and people were literally just abandoning their cars on the road. They caught a ride with somebody else. They walked. They made it home. And after about 3 days, all the cars got home and stuff like that. You know, yeah. So it's not like, you know, sure in Houston there are catastrophes here. You haven't had any here recently. No hurricanes.
Last year.
Yeah. See, but you see, it's like it can happen anywhere. Any place. There's just different natural catastrophes. I was at Adi Daivika Klesha. Yeah. And beyond that is just this guaranteed old age, right? You know? You tell somebody, you tell like a Jiva Goswami here, you're going to die. He goes, yeah, I know that. If I tell you and me, you say, we're going to die. You go, yeah. Yeah. My teeth are getting loose. You know, my vision's going. My liver doesn't work. I'm always coughing at mucus. My memory doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah. You know, probably say, one lawyer, he died and was complaining, I didn't get any warning. Like in the court, you give somebody warning if you can kick them out, right? And he said, well, Yamaraj said, look, you know, your eyes went, your memory went, all this stuff went, everything else. That was all, you just didn't listen, you know. As your body is dwindling. You know? Prabhupada says that old age is a good friend for a devotee. It is. If you're a devotee, as Socrates, he said, oh, Socrates, you have to drink the poison and die. He said, good. At last, I can leave this place. And because of the life I've lived, I'm convinced I'm going to go to a better place. Like that. Yeah? Yeah. So this is, you know, it's not bad. If you're a philosopher, if you're a devotee, it's not so bad. Old age is good. All this pushing, all this impetus. Another thing is increase. Your short-term memory decreases, but your analytical ability and stuff like that starts increasing. You can organize your memories. If you do it, you can start organizing all these memories, all this information you have. You can start putting it in thing and forgetting a lot of things. You know, one of the problems of being young is you don't know too many things. It's like, you know. When you're older, no, you just, no, forget that. What we're going to look at is this and this. These are the important things. Oh, thank you, Grandpa. Okay, now you do it. I gave you the advice. Yeah. So, you know, Varnashram system is a very, very useful system. But unless you're a devotee, unless you're trying to use it for spiritual realization, it's a complete waste of time. You can have the greatest social system in the world, but still you die. Like the dog in the street, like that, and you become something else. So it's a platform for spiritualization. That's the point. Varna Ashram Dharma is that social system which accelerates the evolution of the transcendental qualities of a spirit soul. We have spiritual qualities, but this system will accelerate, you know, the evolution like that. You know, but by itself, it's just like a beautiful garden with no seeds. You know, good water, good sunlight, everything, but no seeds. Yeah? Yeah. So the seed is the Bhagavad Dharma, you know, Bhagavad Gita, right? Spiritual life. And Varna Ashram helps that grow, keeps the weeds out, keeps the animals from attacking it. Seeing so many things. And so therefore then family life is a very good situation, very chaste girl and a very trained brahmachari, marrying together. It's very good, you know, arrangement for spiritual advancement. Yeah. Yeah. To a certain point, and there should be sannyas, there should be vanaprast. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we don't want to separate. You're going to separate, whether you like it or not. Yeah, somehow or other. So why not get ready? And you know, then you get on the psychological level and the connection is still there. I probably said one time, somebody asked him about the sannyas thing, isn't it cruel, this and that. He said, no, he's describing. He said, I've been a sannyasi for so many years. He said, still I think about my wife. This is natural. He said, but I don't go back. That's intelligence. You know? Yeah. Because whose wife are we? Whose husband are we? You know? Whose children are we? This is all coming and going, like relations in a transit lounge in an airport. You meet somebody, you talk to them, and it's gone again. You know? This body we have now will never, ever, ever come again. Ever. The form we have, we look in the mirror. Yeah, I heard that recently. I thought, wow. Never again. Ever. It'll be gone. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I'm so attached to it. And you see, if you go to, you know, if you have someplace, you're someplace at school, right? And you see your picture in somebody's book, like that, right? A picture of yourself and somebody sticking out of somebody's book there. It's like, right? Right? Some girl, you see her picture, if you picture a picture in her book like that. Yeah, because what is it? It's your form. We're so attached to my form. You know? But it's just, what is it? What is a body made of? 75%?
Water.
Like that. We're so attached. You know? Yeah. So the whole system, Varnashram system, Bhagavad Dharma. And for that, we have a nice acharya, so many acharyas, but A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is coming, giving so much literature, giving a community, an association, a school with older students, people on different levels. And we can take advantage of it then and become detached, from this material world, which is guaranteed sukha-dukha, and become attached to the material world, the spiritual world, which is guaranteed ananda, like that, and go back to our real job, which is helping Krishna, serving Krishna. He misses us. He has real feelings. Whatever feelings we have, he has more. So he actually is feeling a lot of, distress that we've left him. Hoping we're going to come back. And Prabhupada says Krishna demands our service, and he also wants it. Both ways. So, koi prashna hai? Any questions? Comments? Anxieties? Yes, sir.
When you say in kitchen on the east and air on the right, how do you, where should the kitchen be?
Okay, yeah. Let me get my map. It's actually I took first place prize in psychology, so it was the whole thing in psychology about how you keep a map, and different people have different spatial orientations. Men and women have different ways of mapping. Gender differences in mapping. Men are more like XYZ coordinates. Women are much more functional and emotional. They connect things up in space like that, which can be a lot better. It doesn't matter. Everybody's different. So mine right now, I'm tossed out of balance here. Because I've got to adjust it here. Okay, north is that way. Wow, it's hard for me. I shouldn't be sitting in this corner. The problem is I should be sitting in that corner. That's the problem. I can't adjust it. Then everything would be like, proper. So it's really gets one good book. You can go to Krishna Culture. They still have any copies available. It was called Vastu, the Origin of Feng Shui, which is a Chinese system. He talks about two pages about that. This is for selling the book. And after that, the whole book's about Vastu. That one devotee from Germany, Gadadhar, Marcus Schmeichel, and he's really studied it. And as far as I know, he's the greatest ISKCON authority on Vastu. He has his own school and everything. He's German. He gets into it. So if you have your map here, here's north, here's east, here's west, here's south.
Yes.
North, east, west, south.
East.
I'm from behind it.
Okay.
This is a user-friendly presentation. So usually it's divided into one square in the center. And then you get, one square here, three on each side, and two in the middle, six like that. So the northeast is fire. Yeah? And then if you go south, that's, what is it? Water? No, not fire. The southwest is fire. Southeast is fire. This is fire. This is space and water. This is air, and this is earth, like that. So if you put it down like that, okay, in the north, then garage, It's good on where the air is, because that's it's good for moving in and out, motion like that, activity. Let's put a guest bedroom over the garage, because it's for coming and going. On the earth corner, it's good to have no windows. Have your house backed up against that corner of your lot with a big solid wall. Have lots of big, heavy storage cases and no basement. Yeah? And so then you're like, you know, grounded. Like in this room, heavy things. It's just your consciousness is, yeah, like that. You know? Yeah. Then if you go to the other corner, which is the northeast, it's good for, again, for it's air and water. So that's good to be open to the sunshine. You know, so every morning you see the sunrise coming up, and your consciousness is sunrise. You know, starting, growing. It's different for different people's astrology, like that. For most people, generally, it's good to have this sunrise in your consciousness rather than sunset. And outside, you put a tank of water, and even medically, the this morning sunlight will ionize the water and produce these negative ions, which are good for energy and health. Also, your skin does photosynthesis, we're told. It's actually, so morning sunlight is extremely important to get morning sunlight for like basic health and stuff like that on the skin, and so on. So many practical things. And then the kitchen is going to be where?
Fire.
Yeah. And nothing in the center, but that's for movement from place to place like that.
Brahma.
Yeah. Brahma or Krishna Balaram. This goes back to like 1000 BC. Yeah. Vasudeva and Balaram, says.
So your bedroom should be in the north? In the east?
Many details. Probably in the earth section like that. Because it's good to be sleeping. But again, different people have different karma. So Gadadhar, when he was doing this, he was talking to one regular astrologer in Delhi. The guy's laughing at him and smiling. He said, to do Vastu without astrology is a crime. And he heard that and he said, well, I didn't want to become the founder of an international criminal organization. So he said, I changed my academy now. And we started introducing some basic principles of astrology and stuff like that. And how to understand the person's horoscope and work with an astrologer. For example, if you can see the back door from the front door of a house, you open the front door and the back door is right there, you can see it, nothing will stay in that house. Yeah. Now, is that good or bad? If you have a tendency to collect too much, it's good. Because your tendency is you need something, we'll just eliminate. Otherwise, you get all this clutter. But if your tendency is to always be short, it'll kill you. The house will just kill you. He has an academy which has an entrance in the southwest, which is and where it is exactly. It breaks down into 64 details. The Bhagavatam describes this in the fifth canto. You can break it down into 64 squares with a predominating deity for each square. So he and his wife had tried to have children. I think they couldn't conceive. And then finally they had a conception. And she started having trouble with the carriage, the gestation, they call it, pregnancy. And doctors told her it doesn't look good, like that. And so he's looking at it, and the Vastu for where the academy is and where they're living is in this area. It's very bad for children and pregnant women like that, you know. He contacted two previous owners, and he told them the same thing. They had a very bad history of the ladies in that house and the children and stuff like that. But also, the reason he never changed it is because it's a national monument. To block the doorway there. So he said it was this point, he was decided that kind of was either, you know, I've got to protect my wife and kid, I've got to take on the German government. So he talked to his students and he said, okay, we will help you fight the German government. So they went out there and one day they'd put bricks in, totally bricked up the doorway, put a wood paneling over the entire wall on the inside, plastered on the outside, and the doorway disappeared. Disappeared from flow of prana, disappeared from people's consciousness. And they took another doorway, which is in a better place, which is minor, and they put in two doors. They put a bigger arch over it, and now this is the doorway, like that. So the subtle world is where we actually live, and that grows across the world. And they had a very nice son. So they're, investigate this scientifically, do statistical analysis, but there are studies that this actually happens like that. This plot. One more thing here. It's like this. And so the Vastu Purusha is there. Every piece of land has a person that makes it a piece of land. When the universe was created there, the Vastu Purusha wasn't connected. So there was no space exactly. He was flailing everywhere and all the space was in trouble. So all the demigods jumped on top of him and got him pinned to the ground, and then space created. You know, this is my house, this is my yard, this is my car. That's a thing that has to be created by the personal influence of the Vastu Purusha. His stomach's in the middle, his feet are in the southeast corner, and his southwest corner, and his head's in the northwest corner. Got that, right? So, it's many details, but all the books that you read, every single one of them, I read, will tell you again and again, never, 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 never put a toilet in the northeast corner. And if you have a toilet in the northeast corner, close it down. You have to use pots for 2 weeks. I mean, it's that bad. I mean, one in the northeast corner in our temple in Gurukula in Brisbane, Australia. Mm. The Vastu guy's walking around and he says, "Women have a lot of influence in this place, don't they?" And I says, "Well, yeah, I thought so." He hardly was arranged like that. He says, "It's okay, but that's just the way it's arranged." He said, "What's that?" "A little building out there in the property." "So that's the outside, you know, stool house there, and toilet. I said, "Tear it down!" Just like, we'll do it. "Okay, no, it's okay. So they got like, you know, four people with big sticks and pushed the whole thing over like that. And under it were two nests of Australian, what's the word, there's one is the viper, the guy got the name, bush viper. These are the most dangerous, most poisonous snakes on the face of the earth. If they hit you, you're dead within 20 minutes maximum, like that. And they pushed it over and they jumped back, and it was just like these nests were there, these horrible poisonous snakes and everything else. And it was sitting in the northeast corner. That's the Vastu Purusha's face, right? So if you're defecating the Vastu Purusha's face, he's going to get his revenge, you know, somehow or other. You know? Yeah. The Vastu Purusha said, "O Brahma, in different yugas, people do sacrifice in the house, and so I can eat Mahaprasad. That's how I live, and I can also take Mahaprasad. But in Kali Yuga, people don't do sacrifice in their home. So how will I live?" And Lord Brahma told the Vastu Purusha, "In the Kali Yuga, people do not do sacrifice to the Supreme in their house, and you have nothing to eat, then you can eat them." Yeah. So you come home, most people come home to their house, and what do they feel? "Let's go out for dinner, right? Let's go out and watch a movie. Let's, you know, it eats their energy, you know? And so therefore they have to engage in illicit sexual relations, they have to have some kind of, you know, stimulation. They have to drink a martini or, you know, something. Heavy stimulation, because their house is just eating their energy like that. You know? So all these things are very real. And if you adjust them properly, then you're automatically inclined towards spiritual consciousness. Who am I? What are these things? What is life? You know, like that. And you don't die like a dog. You die like Socrates. So, okay. Yeah. And the ways you can adjust, you know, many adjustments you can make like that. But the main adjustment is having kirtan, have an altar, have Krishna in your house and chant, and Krishna will, you know, he'll give you inspiration. You know, "I want to be over there. I don't want to be under the stairway anymore." He's pulling me over there. Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay.
People that knew the Vastu, what were they, Brahmanas, or what is that, a Brahminical thing, or?
Yeah, all branches of knowledge are under the Brahmins things, but the Shilpas, the Shilpas, you know, the technicians, they claim that we had all that knowledge. They had the technical knowledge of it, you know, like that. The Brahman is supposed to give the philosophical perspective, the thing like that, and then they're supposed to pass down that, you know, Shudras, technicians, I'm 25% Shudra, no problem, people who are more technically inclined and stuff like that, then they're supposed to give this general guidance to apply it properly. So their activity is also Brahminical, but it's involved with the technical details and stuff like that. You know, the Brahmin is supposed to be airheaded guy, you know, and, you know, thinking about more general things. Marshall McLuhan, my sociology mentor, he said, a technician is somebody who never makes the smallest mistake as he proceeds to the grand illusion. Yeah, every detail is perfect until you arrive at completely the wrong place. It's a great trip, but we're in the wrong place. So the Brahmin is supposed to give that general, yeah, guidance to the kings, the Kshatriyas, you know, about how to deal with things and that. And then they engage the technicians and the mercantile class, you know, properly. And then society is very nice. Now the world is hell. I forgot what percentage of people actually have enough to eat. It's just ridiculously small. It's like less than half, right? Well, it is. Like 30% of the world has enough to eat. You know, 70% of the people don't have enough to eat. You know? Yeah. It's big, big disparities and problems. You know? And it's, you know, it's, seems like about to blow up. Not a good situation. So, anybody who has the intelligence and the knowledge, born in India, you should understand these things. And so many, again, as Parthasarathi, his presentation at the Festival of Inspiration in Vrindavan last month, his point was that anybody in any occupation can become Krishna conscious and preach, can help people, can get the message out there, and there's no limit to how much you can do. He's in the army, you know, and still the whole army is becoming Krishna conscious, I would say, because of him almost. You know, I mean, he tried to get out. You know, he said, okay, what I'll do is I'll bring an entire, you know, busload of Brahmachari Sankirtan devotees to the base, and we'll have a big Harinam Kirtan program, and the next day they'll get me out of here. Nope. he's very good at what he does. You know, he's very, very good. He's a devotee, but he's like one of the best soldiers in the army, you know, killing people. Or else, more as he says, what do you think is his first priority when he goes out, you know, on patrol and stuff like that? What is his first priority? Killing the enemy?
Protect himself.
Yeah, protect his soldiers. He's got 49 soldiers under his direction, sergeants and people like that. And they're not even killing people. His Kshatriya, okay, is it? Someone brought up the point, is this war in Iraq just? And he said, can't talk about that. You know, that's not my job. I know enough to say that there's some people that give intelligent arguments to saying we shouldn't do it, and some people that say that, you know, it's, if we didn't do this, other things would happen worse. So I'm a soldier. You know, it's a Kshatriya. You know, it's my job is to fight the enemy when they fight me bravely, like that, not do abominable things, and just to follow the orders, and then try and understand that things are being done properly, like that. You know, that's somebody else's job. The Prabhupada said the same thing. And then if somebody dies bravely in the Vietnam War, if some soldier dies facing the enemy bravely, he goes to heaven. It doesn't matter. He's not supposed to figure these things out. He told us, I'll get to that one story I told us before. He has a Mahaprasada from Jagannath Puri in his sleeve pocket, and he has his beads inside. He has shelter armshoot around his neck when he goes out. So one time, yeah, sure enough, they were driving, and their vehicle got blown up by a landmine. And then they were attacked, and they're shooting back at people, and on and on. And so he was like actually wounded very seriously in that one. He had to be carried out by a helicopter to live. He did. And so he was, you know, his leg was bleeding and everything else, and his arm was, you know. And so the his soldiers, all the guys under him, knew that, okay, if the sergeant gets it, we're supposed to go over and take the food out of his arm pocket and put it in his mouth. We're supposed to put his beads in his hand. And they like the philosophy. They demand Bhagavad Gita classes from him, other things too. So he's lying there like, you know, his mind is totally messed up, and one's corporal's, you know, he's in the middle of the road, this guy's going across on his belly with his rifle in his arms, like below the fire to get over there, and, you know, and the guy's screaming at him, other pocket, other pocket! Other pocket! And it's like, rasad him out and shove it in his mouth, you know? The bees, inside the coat! See, you think your job is hard, right? Yeah. So they got the beads in his hand. He's nodding at the guy. And he said it worked. He could actually, taste the prasadam in your mouth is so intense that his mind could get a hold of that and think about Jagannath. And the fingers in his beads, he was chanting, and it was, you know, like no oxygen in his body. And then the soldier went back, sort of fighting. And then he said, soldiers, idiots. He said, you give them one task to focus on at a time, and that's it. And these guys were focusing on, this religious stuff, and the guy forgot to, staunch off his bleeding wound in his leg, so he had to rip it open with his own knife like that, tie it off, and then stick an intravenous needle in his own arm like that, They passed out like that. But it's a different dharma, right? For a soldier than it is for a brahmana or something. He has to figure these things out. Even if, if he makes some mistake in the plan or the evaluation, whether we should invade Iraq or not, it's more the counselors that are going to get the karma for that than the president, right? President should have a good, he should select good counselors and listen to them, and it should be applied. He's a man of action. But then the counselors who made the mistake, didn't honestly evaluate things, the user intelligence, their austerity, that's their fault, for doing it. So it comes back to the intellectuals, ultimately, the problems that they, yep. Comes back to the Indians. Yeah. No, because you've taken birth in a good culture. So it's a responsibility. So while I'm working, I can't preach. Well, this guy's a soldier. He has now 300 Bhagavad Gitas going with him back to Iraq this time. He gets up at 1:30 in the morning, chants his rounds, goes to work, comes back, has a shower, goes down to the base public exchange and distributes books. Goes home. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's just a far more advanced person than I am. But also, you can see this is not the first time he's been doing this. This is from a previous lifetime, without a doubt. Yeah. So wherever we're at, whatever ability we have, whatever comprehension we have, and just try and do this. Try and become educated, do austerities, read, study, learn something. And then wherever you go, whoever you meet, in your work, somebody will come in with the longest face on earth, right? And you ask them, well, something happened, Marilyn? See, well, my brother was killed in an auto accident yesterday. Sorry, he's dead. It's really a bummer, he's dead. And you say, yeah, but you can tell him, but it's really unhappy. But hey, what was alive, was the soul, the spirit, man. You put in the language, that doesn't die. I mean, most people, most Americans, you tell them philosophy, they know it. 87% of all Americans believe in God. They have some spiritual consciousness, but it's covered by the media, by the ambience. The bosses have control of it, creating a secular atmosphere. If you talk to them personally, I've had an experience sometime, I mentioned one person just like that, and they said, yeah, I know. Yeah. And so then, goes up. And the more you have the capacity, Krishna will send people. Krishna will send people, to you. Like that. Okay. Our last question.
There's one person in the Gita that says everyone should do their own dharma, and it's better to do your own dharma, I think, imperfectly than to do someone else's part nicely.
Yeah.
So that seems to indicate that if you can do someone else's dharma perfectly, then you would be qualified to do it.
Yeah.
And that it would be just an external reason.
Yeah.
But why would...
I guess at the same point, same question. But I think what it's saying is that even though externally you can do it, better, there's the thing that your certain karma is tied in with your activities, and you actually, during the Kurukshetra battle, for example, Dronacharya just lost control of it, like that. He was just killing foot soldiers, how could they do against him? He had this superior ability, technology. He was killing so many of his foot soldiers and then just slaughtering them. Like that, not without this honor and dharma. Yeah. So then Bhima saw all this and stopped the chariot drive. Stop. He's got off and just walked across the battlefield to Dronacharya and just, put his arm in his chariot, and said, if Brahmins like you would stick to your business and let Kshatriyas like us stick to our business, this killing business would be a lot less, painful. And, Dronacharya was, because Bhima was always like a very frank, straight guy, and Dronacharya was brought him back to his senses like that, So that's what I think what he's doing is he just can't do it, like that. We had a lawyer, Stephanie Trams. She was a lawyer for us one time. She actually was working for Hidayat Anwar as a cousin, big law firm there. And it was all these things we were doing for some big litigation, the temple property, and someone was trying to seize it and steal it and everything else. And she's got a lot of things. So finally, at the end of the whole thing, it took about like 5 months, 6 months. And then finally, we finished the whole thing off, the last meeting with her, and she wrote a check out. She said, I want to, you know, she said, okay, pay her legal fees. And she wrote a check out, I want to give this as a donation to your temple, like that. You know? It was $700. And I said, wow, Stephanie, what's this for? She said, okay, I'll tell you, when I joined here, I was, you know, you saw, I'm a trial lawyer. And trial lawyer means you have to go in front of a judge, you have to argue with another lawyer, and you've got to push the judge right to the point where he's just ready to send you to jail sometimes. I mean, you've got to, they say it, you've got to really, it's a really aggressive, being a trial lawyer, you've really got to stick up for your client, you've got to hop up in the middle of something, and, you know, it's really, it's a real, you know, fighting atmosphere. And she said, you know, listening to your philosophy, whenever I come in contact, and she was really, she said, you know, I realize I'm a woman. I'm very emotional. And after these trial things, other men go down to the bar and sit afterwards and they apologize to each other, have a drink together and slap each other in the back. And they say, yeah, yeah, it's just a game. We're playing for our clients and no hard feelings. Yeah, well, you were a little heavy today. He said, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. But he says, I couldn't do that. I'm a woman. I would go home just totally emotionally, you know, strained. And she said, tell you the truth, I've become a cocaine addict. And it was, she's a single mother taking care of her kid. I would go home and just, you know, taking cocaine. And then by this, I realized this is not a woman's job. And so I've changed my job, and I work for a law firm in San Francisco now. And what I do is I'm doing research, you know, researching trials and stuff like that. And it doesn't pay as much, but it's the kind of job I can do and stuff like that, you know. So everybody discovers is that, you know, maybe a woman can get up there and win the trial cases, but it's not her dharma, you know. Or some Brahmin can be a Kshatriya, but it's not his dharma, you know, really. So superficially you're doing it, but behind it is creating a lot of subtle violence. So better to do your job, you know, even though you can do something better, and just, you know, stick with it. You know? Every endeavor has some fault. You know? That's my comment. Okay. Any kind of... Maharaj is thinking there, I don't know. Is there a question? Or? Yeah. Okay. So we're here, like, you know, for several days, very fortunately, visiting Radhani Lamadava. First time I came to Radhani Lamadava Dham, the new building was there, but there was no tiles on the floor, no marble on the floor. That's the construction level. Who was president then?
Madhava.
Yeah, yeah, he was president. We did a puppet show and came on like that, you know, many years. Yeah. And so we're, you know, we have a lot of programs ourselves, but anybody a little bit later we can discuss some more. Yeah. But a little more kirtan now? And Arve Arti? Arti Kirtan and little prasad?
Yeah.
Okay. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki. Yeah. So we've got a pujari.
Pujari.
No? Oh, it's already offered. It's already finished.
Okay. Pardon? Something already done.
Okay. So Lord Chaitanya was traveling in the Jarikanda forest. Okay. You've already. You want to take it again? I didn't notice you already offered. You know. Lord Chaitanya was traveling in the Jarikanda forest and chanting this mantra. And the bears and the tigers and the monkeys started dancing in ecstasy. So be very careful how you use this mantra. Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Pahima.
Krishna, Krishna,
Keshava Kahima. Krishna 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 Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare,
Thank you.